Hello, Mad or Bad listeners, it's Rachel here. I just wanted to take some time to say a massive thank you to Podcorn for being the sponsor of this episode. Podcorn is a marketplace connecting podcasters to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities, and we have had such a brilliant experience with them. We use them pretty much every week for our episode ads. So you never give up any of the rights for your podcast, and basically Podcorn is here to completely support you. And really, you get to keep all your own rights, you get to have creative freedom, and you know what, it gives you transparency and full control over how it works. So have a look out for Podcorn on www.podcorn.com. That's P-O-D-C-O-R-N. Warning, the following podcast may contain descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised. Any views are all our own and do not in any way reflect the places where we work. Hello and welcome to Mad or Bad. My name is Rachel.
And I'm Neil.
And today we are discussing the psychological phenomenon of false memories. So this episode carries on quite nicely from one of our episodes which we previously did. It came out on February 24th and it was called False Confessions. So they're both very closely linked. However, this episode looks more closely at the actual false memory as opposed to the confession in itself. And I guess looking more at the psychology behind the false memory.
So false memories are everywhere. In everyday situations, we don't really notice or care that they're happening. We call them mistakes or say we misremember things. In psychology, false memory is a phenomenon where a person recalls something that did not happen or recall it differently from the way it actually happened. Suggestibility, activation of associated information, the incorporation of misinformation and source misattribution have been suggested to be several mechanisms underlying a variety of types of false memory phenomena. False memories are a component of false memory syndrome, so FMS. False memories may be the result of recovered memory therapy, a term also defined by the FMSF, and in the early 1990s, which describes a range of therapy methods that are prone to creating confabulations. Some of the influential figures in the genesis of the theory are forensic psychologist
it's Ralph a great name.
Underweger, I don't know if you're German, and psychologist Elizabeth Loftus and sociologist Richard Offshee,
I think. You know what? Before we kind of go further with this, I've come across an amazing podcast which I'm absolutely obsessed about.
Particularly around false.
Yeah, it's called The Walker's Switch. And it's about Walker's Crisps. I've been on about this so much to everyone. I'm like, everyone needs to listen to this. So basically, it's about Walker's Crisps in the UK. They have, you know, lots of different flavours, but basically their cheese and onion flavour is blue.
Blue.
And the salt and vinegar is green. But traditionally, they're actually the other way around. So,
well, when you say traditionally, you're saying
in, like any other brands, basically, and in Ireland.
Well, you
so like
say in Ireland, they are, don't you?
Yeah, but also in the UK, like other brands.
But not Walkers in Ireland, Tato's, which is like the equivalent of Walkers in Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah, well, different brand. It's like a brand, so yeah. Basically, the podcast is surrounding people having a memory, like a collective memory of Walkers switching the colours of the flavours back in the 90s. But Walkers actually say that it never happened. It's absolutely mad because people have like specific memories about like ads that they did to change it and stuff.
Or is it?
But it never happened.
Well,
what's happening?
They're saying Walkers are saying it never happened, but
Gary Lineker said it did.
Footballer in Match of the Day comment. Yeah, he
and he's obviously like the
advertised for years, forever. And he's saying
he's always been the man.
It did happen.
Yeah.
And again, this leads into this now. Yeah, I don't know whether I've got a false memory or. I seem to think
I was too young.
I distinctly remember something. Well, I was very young myself, but I distinctly remember something about this. But I don't know whether it's indeed, you know, a false memory or
so weird, isn't it?
And didn't you say there were some figures on it or something that three? What was it that there were some figures you quoted to me from this podcast? How many people said that it?
Oh, it was like 2/3 of British people that they had
spoken to,
that it happened, and 1/3 say that it doesn't. And it's like, why do two-thirds of people say that it happened?
Unless Walkers are just doing it as a...
But why would they do that?
Well, like to get people talking about walkers, isn't it?
It's so bizarre and mind-blowing. And I love it. There's something so, like, interesting about it.
Walkers are like psychologists, to like.
It's so strange. But even a guy from an advertising agency who worked... Walkers was a client for, said that he remembers some kind of an ad, but whether it actually went out or not, he can't remember because it was like back in the 90s. But I'm like, oh my God, did they switch them or not?
If he's an ad, you know, a fellow that does the advertisements for Walkers or did, then surely there's got to be. But then again, has he got a fault? But would everyone have this false memory? Or is it just that? I don't know. Who knows?
And it's a mystery. It's honestly such a mystery.
It's interesting, though, that you come up with that example. While we're doing
so if anyone remembers the Walker switch, let us know.
Yeah, indeed.
So in 1906, Hugo Munsterberg, the chair of the psychology laboratory at Harvard University and the president of the American Psychological Association, wrote in the Times magazine about a case of false confession. A woman had been found dead in Chicago and a man had been accused of her murder. The young man was, quote, quite willing to repeat his confession again and again. Each time it became richer in detail. The account of the murder was, quote, absurd and contradictory, a clear instance of the involuntary elaboration of a suggestion from his interrogators.
One case, the McMartin preschool trial, was based on 9 victims' memories of molestation and ritual abuse, memories that they had supposedly forgotten and then, after being interviewed, recovered. The case fell apart in 1990 because the prosecution could produce no evidence of the victims' claims. A cognitive psychologist named Elizabeth Loftus, who we've
just mentioned
a bit ago, who had consulted on the case, wondered whether the children's memories might have been fabricated, so basically involuntarily elaborated, almost involuntarily planted in their minds, rather than actually
recovered from real memories. Mm. So Loftus conducted an experiment to test this theory. Subjects of the experiment were told a story where they had gotten lost in a shopping centre and were subsequently rescued by an adult. To make the story more believable, Loftus added kind of biological information given from the subject's parents. The subjects were interviewed twice at 1 week and 2 week intervals, and it appeared by the second week's interview that many subjects had internalised the story and actually believed it to be true. 2 other psychologists, Julia Shaw of the University of Bedfordshire and Stephen Porter of the University of British Columbia, have since expanded on this theory and have successfully implanted false memories of criminal activities in participants' minds. So, quote, we thought we'd have something like a 30% success rate, and we ended up having over 70%, said Shaw. We only had a handful of people who didn't believe us. So the importance seems to lay in taking that information and suggestion from people, from power or people from authoritative sources, so police, you know, psychologists, people in power, basically.
Yeah. So another example is that of 19-year-old Californian girl named Holly Ramona, who began to recall being abused by her father during a therapy session in the 90s. Her memories were aided by doses of sodium amytyl, so-called truth serum, known to make people believe they're recalling real events. Her father successfully sued the therapist for negligence in 1994 and was the first case to find therapists guilty of implanting false memories.
It's interesting, isn't it? I presume that they didn't intentionally implant false memories.
I was just going to say
that. But it's that kind of suggestion thing, isn't it? It's so easy to suggest anything. Like if you're having like this counselling kind of therapy session and you're saying, you know, describe the abuse that you encountered.
Yeah.
That already is basically saying that you've been abused, so describe it. And it's almost like you have to describe it then because you're kind of almost...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I guess. Well, you're kind of on the spot, sort of. The expectation is
It's weird, isn't it?
I mean, I think the best example so far is the Walker's... I mean, it's easy to relate to, isn't it? The Walker's Christie.
It's just nuts. Yeah, I love it so much, though.
It's a bit... what's the word, like... You know, it's kind of not as important or whatever.
No,
but
it's an interesting example of that's kind of collective false memory.
It is. So in August 2015, so much more recently, the UK police launched an investigation into the alleged paedophilia of deceased former UK Prime Minister Edward Heath. So that was in the...
when was he Prime Minister?
I think he was elected in something like 73, and then I think he got, no, he wasn't. He was Prime Minister, but I think he was out of office. He was like in the shadow cabinet, shadow Prime Minister. And then I think he Margaret Thatcher, I think in like 75 or something, like he either stepped down or Margaret Thatcher had a...
Maggie?
Yeah, then obviously she went on in
yeah
79 to win the election, but we're going off track. At the heart of this allegation, so against Edward Heath, was a woman, so who was called Lucy X, who investigating criminologist Rachel Hoskins has since discovered underwent psychotherapy and hypnosis, which may have fueled her allegations. In March 2017, police shut down the inquiry, which cost more than £1 million in taxpayers' money, reportedly due to insufficient evidence. He wasn't alive then, was he, Ted Heath? But obviously it's his good name, isn't it, in his family? And I remember this, actually, at the time, which not long ago, and I when we were going to do this episode, I remember that. And I did, before we did the research for this, I wondered what had happened with that kind of allegation.
It's a lot of money, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Taxpayers' money, yeah. Huh.
So the evidence is there showing that innocent adult participants can be convinced over the course of even a few hours that they have perpetrated crimes. And these are crimes as serious as, you know, assaults with weapons or, you know, rapes, that kind of a thing. The findings have clear implications for criminal interrogation and other aspects of legal procedure, potentially affecting suspects, witnesses and those involved in both law enforcement and in legal counsel. But they almost, you know, could apply to really interviews that take place in other kind of settings and contexts, including more therapeutic counselling or, you know, even personal settings, really. So, quote, and this is a quote from Julia Shaw, one of the psychologists who we're speaking about. So she says, understanding that these complex false memories exist and that, quote, normal individuals can be led to generate them quite easily is the first step in preventing them from happening. By empirically demonstrating the harm bad interview techniques, those which are known to cause false memories, can cause, we can more readily convince interviewers to avoid them and to use, you know, good techniques instead. So it's obviously quite worrying when you think about police interviews and false confessions. The psychologist Saul Kassin has studied interrogation and false confessions for decades. And, you know, he says how basically his experiment illustrates perfectly how social pressure can make innocent people admit to wrongdoing. And a quote from him, think about the dilemma the suspect now faces. I don't have a memory for this, but the person who took care of me does. Therefore, it must be true and I have to find a way to remember it. So it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy,
isn't it?
It happened. I don't remember it, but it must have happened. Yeah. So I will almost kind of concoct that story to make sense of things. It is really interesting, isn't it? And there's loads of like different examples, like making a murderer. Depends who you ask, though, but... I mean, there was the whole thing of the young chappie. I can't remember his name. The nephew. And how he apparently confessed under, you know, police interrogation that he helped in this murder. But some people seem to think he did actually, you know, that he was involved. Some people don't. I don't know. It was Stephen Avery. That was the fella. Brendan Dassey.
Yeah.
That is the episode for this week. This is the second last episode, actually.
Mini Mad or Bad.
We will be doing Lunacy and the Moon, which is a really interesting one, actually, because obviously working in healthcare, you tend to use that phrase a lot. So we will be doing that one in 2 weeks' time. And then I think we're going to take a break for a while because...
From Mini Mad or Bad. Yeah, I mean, We've just had a baby,
and the baby is not sleeping very well. So basically, we're not sleeping very well. And also, it's just really hard to get time when there's a baby.
But Mini Mad or Bad will be back. Mini Mad or Bad will be back. But Mad or Bad will just continue.
Will continue as is. Although we are going to change the way we do it a little bit. So we're going to start doing... two stories in one episode, and we're basically going to tell each other the story because we did that for Christmas and we really enjoyed doing it that way.
What was that one? It was a John Lennon.
John Lennon and the Lost Feliz Murder Mansion.
That's it, yeah.
That was fun. Yeah. I liked doing it that way. So just to change it up a little bit and keep things interesting. So thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
And we shall see you again next week for a long episode.
Keep well.
Yes, COVID-19. Keep well. Keep at home. Stay home. Goodbye. See you. Bye. As always, catch us on facebook.com/madorbad. You can catch us on Twitter. Our handle is @madorbadthepod. And also, we now have a Patreon account, so please go look us up. It is patreon.com/madorbad. You can access exclusive content. We have exclusive episodes only available to Patreon supporters. So, yeah, go find us.